Hey everyone, welcome to part two of the Big Fat Positive bonus episode where we answer listener questions that you guys sent in to us for our Check in the Inbox segment. We have a few more questions to answer and we are really excited to get to them. So let's get started.
All right, let's keep going. So we have a question from Cass. Cass says, I've been trying to conceive for a year and a half and there's been a few small hiccups in my blood work and my OB has suggested IVF as the next possible step. I've heard someone mention IVF in the podcast, and my husband and I are close to beginning that journey ourselves. I know it's all individualized, but can you share a little bit about what the journey was like for you? Were both children conceived through IVF? Shauna?
I guess that question is for moi. Well, first off, I talk a lot about this in episode 21. I kind of share in depth about the journey. So definitely check out that episode if you want to hear a lot about it.
The title is When Getting Pregnant is Hard AF, if I recall.
Yes. Yes. Because getting pregnant for me was hard AF. And for me, it started with a couple years of infertility, and then I had a miscarriage, and then I was just like, I need to go see a fertility doctor. And luckily, my first try with Clomid, which is just a fertility drug, helped me get pregnant with L. And then a couple years went by, I had another miscarriage. And by that time, you know, with my history of infertility and my history of miscarriages and my age, I just was like, I don't want to mess around with this anymore. And I decided that I wanted to look into IVF. So I went to the doctor and that's what he suggested for me too. And I was just so gung-ho about it. Like once I made my mind up, I was just like, we're doing this. Despite how intimidating it sounded and what a long journey it sounded like and all the needles and everything that was like ahead of me, I just decided to take it day by day and just always have the attitude of, well, I'm just going to try. I'm just going to go to the doctor and get a consultation. We'll see. I'm just going to start taking these drugs. We'll see if I produce any eggs. I don't know. So I think kind of having an attitude of like, I'm just going to go for this and see what happens really helped me. Otherwise, I probably would have like never done it because of fear. So to answer your question, only one of my children is conceived through IVF. The other one is conceived through a fertility drug called Clomid.
It just occurred to me that maybe she meant both of our children, like my child and your child.
Oh, maybe.
And I should say, I didn't need any help from a fertility doc to conceive my child.
Humble brag.
I mean, and honestly, but that's the thing. There's no bragging about it because it has absolutely no reflection on your worth or value as a woman or your ability to mother. You know, it's just like stupid roll of the dice of whether you can like get that egg and sperm together and keep it nice and warm. You know, it's like it's so amazing to me. And I do think that there's so many people who go through fertility treatments and are so and don't realize how many other women are going through it because it's still, you know, shrouded a little bit in secrecy or, you know, you don't want to people aren't shouting it from the rooftops. And so I think that it's great that you are talking so openly about it because so many people go through this. So many. Yeah,
definitely. And I will say when I recorded that episode 21, I remember being totally nervous. I mean, I just felt like embarrassed at that point that, you know, it had come to that and I was scared to talk about it. I didn't want to jinx anything. I was so nervous about the pregnancy. And now that Cece is almost a year old, it's just like I'm in a completely different place with it. Once you go through the whole process and you have that baby and you realize that it's not any different than the baby that you had without IVF or any different from your friend's babies, you know? And you just, it's just amazing that the science could help you create this child. I mean, it just like moves me to tears almost. And so I can speak about it now with so much confidence and enthusiasm. And I do think that if your doctor is suggesting this, that you might want to explore it. It's not an easy road, of course. But now that I've come out the other side and I have my baby. It's just like, I'm so, so grateful and just so glad that I went through it. And honestly, all the needles are a distant memory now. Everything about the process is kind of a distant memory, except the wonder and joy of having the baby.
No. So, yeah. So, Cass, good luck with everything. Keep us posted. Yeah. And thank you for listening.
All right. We have a couple questions from Whitney. Her first question is, how are your babies sleeping now? How many and how long are naps? Good question. Laura, you have been a nap champion. Why don't you update us on what's going on with you guys and sleep?
Yeah. So as people know, if they've listened to earlier episodes, naps were not always our jam in this house. I mean, I love naps, but my baby was not into them at first. He would nap like max 30, 40 minutes. And oh God, it would drive me crazy and I never knew what to do. But once I started sleep training, which I talked about in episode 55 and 56, it just changed our naps completely. Because once you completed nighttime sleep training, we could do nap training, which is like sleep training, but for naps. And it worked like a fucking charm, Shauna.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm so glad.
Me too. So yeah, my baby, he's on two naps now. We went down from three naps to two at about 6 months old. I could just tell that he wasn't really like going down for that third nap very easily, and it was starting to interfere with his bedtime. So I switched him to two naps, and that's been working like gangbusters. So he will pretty reliably sleep an hour and a half to 2 hours in the morning, and then like another hour to hour and a half in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And it is glorious, and I love it so much. And this is on top of him sleeping 11 hours at night, which, like, brag. This is not humble bragging. This is, like, straight up bragging. And I know there's a lot of people out there who, like, would kill for a baby that slept like this. And I know it's a combination of him just being a naturally good sleeper and then me doing the sleep training on top of it. So I will say I used Taking Care of Babies. We've talked about it. There's links on our website that you can find. And I thought she was a genius. I just would follow her to the end of the earth. And yeah, because my guy is just sleeping so freaking well now. So
through all the drills and jackhammers and everything out in your backyard.
Dude, yes. I mean, we've been doing all this construction in the backyard and they were literally jackhammering right outside his door.
That's crazy.
Breaking up concrete. And he slept through the whole thing.
He's just
I could not believe it.
White noise.
I know, it was just additional white noise. I will say that we double up the white noise. We have a little like white noise machine, and then we also turn the Sonos on to like, I have this track I found called Deep Pink Noise for Baby Sleep.
Oh.
And it's like a low, like almost like an airplane hum, like it's really, really low. So I layer the two white noises. I don't know if it's overkill, but I do it.
Well, it works. Yeah, my baby's pretty much on the same nap schedule to answer question how my baby's napping too. And we do the white noise. We have blackout curtains. We make the room dark. Those are our golden tickets to naps.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I'm really pretty strict about being home for the first nap. The second nap we can do in the car if necessary, but he really does well if we're home. So the nice thing about being on two naps is that you have like a big sort of lunch window where you can go out and do stuff. I don't want to go down to one nap. I know it's going to happen eventually, but then they'll be napping like straight through lunch hour, which...
Oh, that's so true. I forgot about that. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm enjoying this while it lasts.
Just have to hit happy hour instead.
Ooh, happy hour. Yes. So things are going great. So thank you for the question, Whitney. You actually had another question, which I am really curious about. So here it is. You said, I'm looking for tips and ideas for a first birthday party. Since your babies are just a bit older than mine, by the time the episodes come out, I would love to have some tips on this. So, Shauna, you're right in the middle of planning this birthday party, and I am actually just getting started for my baby. So you talked about it briefly on the last episode.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I have thrown a first birthday party once before, for Elle, obviously. And I would say that my tips are, if possible, keep it small. I feel like Elle was very overwhelmed by her first birthday party. Like, we invited a lot of our adult friends she hadn't seen in ages or didn't even know, and she just saw one of them, she saw one of them and just started freaking out, crying, and spent the first half of the party crying and was just like, what are we doing? Why are we here? And she got better, you know, as the party went on and it ended up being really nice and stuff. But this time around, we're going to try to do it a little bit smaller. Although I think it will still be chaotic because there are going to be some older kids, Elle's age, that will be there kind of running amok. So I don't know what that's going to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other tips, do it at a time that's not during nap time. I'm doing it from 11 to 1 because that's kind of her wake window, I guess is what you call it, right, Laura?
Yeah, wake window.
Yeah, definitely make sure that they're not too sleepy. And feed everyone, if possible, you know, if you're into this kind of thing, you know, provide a little beer, a little sangria, a little something fun to liven up the kids' party a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And as far as, like, activities, I don't even know if I'm going to plan activities for kids or what, or if I'm just going to say the activity is eating cake.
I think that's enough. Also, kids play. Like, they play with each other. If there's another kid there, there's your activity.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm having a whole thing with planning my baby's first birthday party, which is our house is small and everyone's RSVPing yes, which is so great. Like, family is coming in from out of town. But that means that I think we're going to have to move it to another venue.
Oh.
So I think we're going to have to lay down some cash to rent a place because I was just going to do the park, but it's January. And like even if it's not raining, it's going to be cold and the grass is going to be damp. And I just don't know, you know? So I think we're just going to throw money at the problem and rent some kind of like play area or something. I don't know.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, just you don't want to stress about it.
Yeah, it's definitely easier to throw money at the problem and then, you know, other people clean up. So, but yeah.
But if you don't have a lot of money to spend, you can also DIY a lot of stuff. I mean, the park does work, you know what I mean? Like, and you can make decorations, you can make food, you can make cake. There's so many like fun things you can DIY too.
Oh, I would 100% be at the park if it wasn't an early January birthday, you know?
Also because we have the experience of our friend Jen, whose son's birthday is also in January, and his first birthday at the park did get rained out, and they had to last minute move it to their apartment. So,
and their apartment at least was like on a flat, like, you know, didn't have like a million stairs going up to it. My problem is that my house not only is small, but it's kind of like a toddler death trap. And I just fear, like, we're up on a hill and there's stairs and there's like terraces that are somewhat unsecured. Also, we have all this construction going on in the back, which is supposed to be done by then, but it was supposed to be done 6 months ago. So, yeah, this is my problem. But next year, I think we're going to have it low-key because I don't need, you know, I don't need to throw a gigantic party for him. We're just celebrating, you know. But it's really nice that everyone wants to come and celebrate with us for him. So, yeah.
It'll be fun. They'll both be fun.
I'm excited for your babies, for Cece's first birthday party. I've got my rainbow gear all picked out.
Yay! Thank you.
And I can't wait to see your cake.
Too. Yeah. Yeah. And Whitney, let us know what you end up deciding to do for your babies first. We want to hear all about it.
Hey, should we take a break and come back with more questions and answers?
Let's do it. Laura, we recently had our moms on the show, and it was so fun hearing their stories from the past.
I loved hearing what they had to share about their experiences being pregnant and having young kids. But you know they have so many more amazing memories and stories to share.
Yes, and that's why Storyworth is such a wonderful gift for the mother figure in your life. It's a way to capture those stories and memories for years to come.
And what better time to give Storyworth than for Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. Right now, our listeners can save $10 off your first purchase by going to storyworth.com/BFP.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, such as, what is your favorite memory of your parents?
All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year of fun, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come.
I gifted Storyworth to my mom a couple years ago, and her hardcover book is a special memento on my bookshelf that my girls and I love to look through.
My mom did one too and included lots of pictures from her childhood, which Sebastian and Augie love looking at.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/BFP.
That's StoryWorth.com/BFP to save $10 on your first purchase. There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. No complicated routine, no multiple-step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
Absolutely. That's why we have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best.
The secret to OneSkin's success is their proprietary OS1 peptide, which switches off the aging cells and has been clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier and improve skin health markers.
For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code BFP when you check out at OneSkin.co.
One of my favorite things about OneSkin products is how easy they are to use. I swear, I've seen skin routines with like 20 steps, but not OneSkin. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply twice daily.
We aren't the only ones who love OneSkin. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer.
My skin tends to get really irritated this time of year, but since using the OneSkin face supplement every day, my skin feels calm and healthy. I've also been using the eye topical supplement, which I really feel brightens up my face.
Get started today with 15% off using code BFP at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BFP. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, I will be the first to admit that I don't always prioritize my own wellness. With kids and work, it never feels easy to fit in taking care of myself. But with Alo Moves, I find it easier than ever to do so.
Same. With the Alo Moves app, everything I need is in one place. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, and so much more.
If you're curious what Alo Moves has to offer, visit alomoves.com and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership.
I love that I can easily find a class that's perfectly suited to my interests and ability level. They offer classes from beginner to advanced, and all classes are on demand, so you can fit them into your busy schedule.
They have high-intensity classes if you're looking to get in a good sweat, and low-key mindfulness classes if you're looking to get centered. They even offer help with sleep, which we all know is crucial for moms.
Ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Alo Moves, I've been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer.
One thing I really like about Alo Moves is that they create themed playlists, so it's easy to find content on the areas you're interested in. One of my favorite playlists right now is called Meditation for Productivity.
Ooh, I love the sound of that one. Unlock your personal wellness routine with Alo Moves. Go to alomoves.com now and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's alomoves.com, code BFP. alomoves.com, code BFP.
And we're back.
So our next question is from Emily. It's an audio question, so I'm going to play it. Here we go.
Hi, Shauna and Laura. So I have a request from you guys. My name is Emily. I'm from Iowa. I've been listening to you guys for about 2 or 3 months now, once I found out I was pregnant. So I'm about a little over three months pregnant now. And I was wondering if you guys could do like some sort of segment or talk about things that surprised you about birth or motherhood. So like I am a first time mom, obviously, and I like have no idea what to expect. Like, how do they, like, okay, maybe this is common sense, but maybe the segment could be called like not so common sense things or something, because it's the things that no one tells you, but everyone goes through them. So like, how do they check your cervix? How frequently are you supposed to breastfeed? Like things like that. And maybe they tell you that in the hospital while it's happening, you know, but would be good for moms to be to know, as well as parenting tips or, you know, parenting things that you're supposed to know, but you don't know. So, just an idea. I love your guys' podcast. You guys are the best. And can't wait to hear some more.
I love this question. Thank you, Emily, so much. Because basically everything caught me off guard with giving birth and becoming a parent. I just had this vision that, you know, I'm just going to like waltz out with my adorable baby and just love it forever and like never have any issues. So yeah, there's like a lot of things. And for me, it all started when my water broke. That was the first thing that was like, whoa, that's unexpected. It can happen, obviously, anytime. I'm sure we've seen it in the movies. My water broke at 4 a.m. This is the first time around, right? Because my second birth was a planned C-section. So the first time around, it was not. And so it might not be common sense what it feels like to have your water break. So
yeah, I'm curious. I didn't get this experience.
This might be TMI.
No such thing on this podcast.
This is true. Basically, I don't know, if you ever like have a really heavy period and you kind of just like feel like a gush of something like down below, it's kind of like that, but even more intense because it's just like a lot of liquid. It was so intense, it woke me up from my sleep. I was just like, dang. Whoa, what's going on? And, you know, and then it just kind of like leaks out of you, like it pours out of you. So the whole ride to the hospital, I had to keep like a hand towel, sit on a hand towel because it was like leaking everywhere. And the other thing that caught me off guard of that whole experience was how much my body was instantly shaking. Just, I don't know if it was nerves, adrenaline. And I've heard this from a few people now that it's common to just like full body shiver and shake, like maybe just after your water breaks or just the whole anticipation of it was really strange to me. So,
interesting.
That could happen.
Were you past your due date? I don't remember.
No, I was about 2 or 3 days before my due date.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's a smaller percentage of people who have the like dramatic amniotic fluid gush like you have, right? Like I think it's more common for people's water to either just not break at all or just have like a trickle, if I remember my baby center research.
Yeah, I think it's like 10% of people, they say, on average. The other thing I did not realize until my water broke is that once your water breaks, you need to give birth within the next 24 hours, basically, because the amniotic fluid is coming out and not around the baby anymore. You really need to get to the hospital and get that baby out, which is part of the reason I ended up having a C-section after 20 hours of labor, because I was like about to reach that 24-hour point and I was running out of fluid. The nurses were actually pumping my vagina with like fake amniotic fluid, like trying to keep the baby.
Oh, I didn't even know they could do that.
Yeah, they did. Trying to keep the baby afloat in there, and it didn't really help. She was still in
distress.
Didn't
work in the end.
It didn't.
I'm pretty sure it's an infection risk too, right? The 24 hours. Yeah. It's not just about the amniotic fluid being low, but that there's a big infection risk. Yeah.
Because there's a breach in the I don't even know what you call it. Not the placenta.
The amniotic sac?
The amniotic sac. There's a breach in it. And so the infection stuff can come in. And speaking of that, I'll transition into checking the cervix. I know a lot of nurses and doctors now don't want to check it too often because what it involves is the nurse sticking fingers up inside of your vagina to check your cervix and see how white it is. So apparently, like, if they can put in two fingers, it's, like 2 centimeters. That's how they do it. So
that sounds excruciating.
I say this because
I didn't ever have my cervix checked. The one benefit, I mean, there were other benefits, but one of the main benefits of having a breech baby from like day one, essentially, was they never bothered checking my cervix because they're like, what's the point? You're not giving birth that way. We don't need to check it. And
right.
Yeah. Was it painful for you?
No. It's not painful.
Good.
I mean, I was used to it. You know, it's kind of just like having a transvaginal ultrasound, just like putting something up there. And if your cervix is dilated, you know, it's not going to hurt to jam a fist up there. I don't know if
I don't believe. I don't know. I'm still like, I don't know about that. But yeah.
But mine never dilated past like 1 centimeter. So also, I don't have a lot of experience with it. It's another reason I needed my urgent C-section, as I wasn't dilating.
Did your doctor check your cervix before
you went into labor or before your water broke? He did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the couple appointments leading up to the birth, she would check and see. And I was never really dilated at that point. So, yeah. So some
well,
fun
we know
stuff
how that turned
there.
Out.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have any experience with labor because, as I mentioned, my baby was persistently breech. So I just went straight into the C-section. I talked about that a lot. So you can go back and listen to my birth story if you're interested in that. But I will tell you that there are a lot of things about breastfeeding that I was very caught off guard about.
Yes, tell us.
So the first was like the duration of breastfeeding. Like, I didn't realize how long it took to breastfeed in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, until someone told me, of course, once the baby came, like, initially they say you should do 20 minutes on one breast and 20 minutes on the other. Oh, and I was like, and that's every 2 hours. And every 2 hours, what they you hear from your friends, like, oh, they have to feed every 2 hours. What they don't tell you is that's from the beginning of breastfeeding.
Of the session. And I was told every 2 to 3 hours. And you know me, I took it to 3 hours. So.
You took it to three.
Just so you know, that's also possible.
Sure, every 2 to 3 hours. But it starts when you first begin the breastfeeding session. So if your breastfeeding can take 40 minutes, you don't actually get 2 hours between, you know, the sessions or whatever you're, you know, you think, oh, I have 3 hours. You don't have 3 hours. You got, you know, 2 hours and 20 minutes if you're going, if you're stretching it. So that was a surprise. Also, what was a surprise is that 20 minutes on each boob recommendation is actually not required for every woman. Turns out for me, that was overkill. So thankfully, on the, I think, day one, my mom came in. I started breastfeeding. And then I was like, I got to switch to the other side. And she's like, do you? The baby seems pretty, like, full. He seems okay. And I was like, but everyone says you have to switch. She's like, not if you have good supply and the baby's full. You don't have to switch and the baby's gaining weight. Mm. And I discovered that my baby, like, our little copacetic relationship there meant we didn't actually have to switch. So I turned into a one-side nurser, which just really helped me. So,
yeah.
And it helped me from having an oversupply. Because I think for breastfeeding, this is another thing no one told me, is it's a supply and demand relationship if it's working sort of normally the way it's supposed to. But the idea is that your body produces what the baby needs. And if your body thinks the baby needs more because they're suckling like for longer than they need to, or you're pumping after every session, especially at the very beginning, your body's going to, like, if you're pumping after every nursing session, your body's going to think it needs twice as much milk as the baby actually needs. So you're going to end up with like an oversupply, which is really painful, and like mastitis and all that stuff. So yeah, no one bothered telling me that thing. But yeah, the other thing that's related, we're talking about switching boobs within a session, but I was totally caught off guard by the fact that you were supposed to start on the other boob every other time. Like, do you remember learning about that? I didn't realize, like, it didn't even occur to me that if you started on the left side last time, you should start on the right side this time. And that's even if you're feeding on both breasts. And I was like, oh, okay. And then trying to keep track of that, thank God for apps.
Oh, yeah.
I could not
please,
keep track of that.
You can't keep track of that in this day's newborn state.
Put a hair tie on your wrist, or my friend Carrie even gave me a
I thought you were going to say put a hair tie on your boob.
That would be painful.
That would be really
not
weird.
Not recommended. But yeah, Carrie gave me a little cute little bracelet as a gift that you could like switch back and forth. But then you're like, did I remember to switch it? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, those were my breastfeeding surprises for sure.
I love that. Should I talk about some surprises once the baby's born and you're in the hospital?
Yeah.
I had heard about the baby's first poop, but I was really surprised to see what it was actually like. What is it? The meconium?
Meconium, yeah. That shit is real.
It is. And it's just, it's so crazy. It's unlike any other poop they'll ever have. I think my baby's had maybe a couple of those, you know, really work out that stuff that's been sitting inside their intestines while it was inside your body. And it's very, like, black and shiny, almost like licorice that's been like
melted down. Licorice. It's that sticky, too. It's so hard to get off of their butt. Like, and you're also like, oh, my perfect little newborn, and you're afraid of like wiping too hard, and then you get this meconium and you're like, how the hell am I gonna get this off?
Yeah, you have to be so vigorous on that tiny little baby. Oh my goodness. Another thing that surprised me was how many tests and checks they did on my babies in the hospital. I was not prepared for that. Like, people would just whoosh in and be like, okay, we're taking the baby away for the hearing test. And I was like, what? Hearing test? And gotta prick her toe for this test and this test. And do you know what all those little tests were and stuff?
Yeah, I have a pretty good idea. So it's interesting they whisked her away because I don't think my baby ever left the room. They did the hearing test in room. So there's,
they did for one of my babies, but not the other.
Interesting. So, yeah, there's newborn screening, which my mom talked about in the episode we interviewed her, because she's a geneticist. Right. And she was actually responsible for, like, helping expand newborn screening in California and I think nationwide. So what they do is they draw blood, and it tests for all these diseases that are, like, really important you find out the baby has right away. One of them is galactosemia, I think is what it's called. But so it's like a baby who can't process the sugar that's in breast milk. And, you need to know if the baby has that because you need to stop breastfeeding right away. So it's a fantastic program because you get to find out all this stuff that you would, in the past not know for months until symptoms appeared. So those are really great. But, it's so sad seeing your baby get their little heel pricked in the blood. Yeah. There's a vitamin K shot. I think that's right after birth, though.
Yes.
There are, I think, a couple other immunizations. Hepatitis, I think, is one of them. I'm trying to remember. There's the hearing test, of course. That's pretty straightforward.
There's the bilirubin jaundice test standard?
Yes, yes. Because that's a really big problem with babies. And so they come and they bring a little, like, it's like a little light. It almost looks like a thermometer, right? It's like a little thing they put on their forehead to see how yellow their skin is, basically, to see if they have jaundice, because jaundice is a problem that's very common in newborns. So I think those were all
the tests. Then, of course, there's
the
personality test. They come in and get the baby. The 10-questionnaire.
You know, did this happen to you? You were at Cedars. It probably did. I was shocked by a photographer coming to the room and saying, like, it's time for your newborn photo session. And I was
what? Definitely. Yeah.
And at first I was like, no, get away. But then I was like, maybe we should. And we did it. And it actually, they turned out great. And then I got my mom to buy them because I was like, I'm not going to drop money on this, but my mom will. And so we actually have some really great photos of the baby when he was like 2 days old. So,
cute. Mine didn't turn out so good. I just like screenshotted the watermarked versions that they emailed me and I was like, good enough for me. Cheap Shauna.
It was, I definitely was not prepared for a photographer to show up when I'm like nursing. I'm like, huh? What's happening? But they were actually really great.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I actually recommend doing
it. A lot of people in and out
it.
Of the room.
Oh, God. Endless people in and out of the room. The 4 a.m. visits from the nurse, and you're just like, ugh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, being in the hospital is rough. It usually only lasts a couple days, so that's good. I have another sort of diaper-related thing that you would have never experienced because you have girls. I learned the hard way that when you put a diaper on a baby boy, you have to point the penis down.
Oh.
If the penis is pointing up, urine leaks all over because it just sprays up. It's they don't tell you this stuff.
So you learned that by trial and error?
Well, I learned it because I kept being like, why are his diapers always leaking out the front? And it's like, is he too small? What's going on? And then a quick Google search was like, point the pee-pee down. I was like, point the pee-pee down. Okay, got it.
Yep, no one tells you that one.
No one tells you. So here we are. If you have
here
a boy,
we are telling
Emily,
you people.
You know. Yeah. Point that pee-pee down. And it continues to be an issue. Like, it's something you can't sleep on, you know? Like, it doesn't go away after the newborn phase.
You've got to figure that one out.
Yeah.
Here's another one that caught me off guard. I mean, I knew I would love my baby, but I was shocked when this was the first time around. I was in the hospital. She was in her bassinet. And Steve went out to get something from the drugstore or something for me. And I was alone with her for the first time. And all of a sudden, it just felt like my heart was like opening and expanding. And like, in that moment, I know for sure, I just fell in love with her so hard. And this was after a day, probably. So it took like a day. Mm-hmm. And it was just undeniable. Like, I never imagined like this type of love, like, could overcome me. And it was so fast and hard. And it was just like, from there on out, like, I was just like an open wound of love for this baby.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It's so sweet. And I love my second baby to death, but it was a little bit different with her. Like, that feeling did come, But with us, it's more like the love is like growing and growing and growing and getting bigger and more as she gets older. So I was surprised that it can feel different with different children and probably different women and different experiences.
I do wonder, I think people don't realize how common it is to have a baby and then not feel that instant love. All we ever hear about is like, the baby came out and I just was instantly madly in love and I never could imagine my life without the baby. And honestly, that's not, I think, even the majority. I think for a lot of people, it takes, you know, longer, a day, a week, a month, a couple months. You know, if you're suffering from postpartum depression or anxiety, it can take even longer. And like, no one really talks about that because no one wants to admit like, oh, it took me a while to love my baby, you know? And it's not, I think for me, it was a more of a slow burn as well. Like the minute he came out, I felt so protective of him. I actually, that night had dreams and like the hour I got to sleep that I was like, literally punching and kicking armed robbers who were trying to break into our house to protect the baby. And so I was just like immediately had that like mama bear response. But the like overwhelming, oh shit, I'm so in love with you. Like, I can't believe it feeling. It definitely took a while. Like, I don't even know if I have a pinpointed moment. I just know that like there was a time when I was home and I like looked at him and like it's, you can almost like feel the happy drugs being released into your bloodstream and like being picked up by your neurotransmitters, you know, you're just like, oh my God, I love this baby so much, you know, like, but I wonder if maybe it's more common to have it take a little longer with C-sections than if you go through labor, because I'm sure there's something about like the intensity of labor that may create an intensity of emotion afterwards. I don't know. But I do say it, I will say for people, I think it does worry people if the baby comes out and they're not instantly like that, having that like madly in love moment. And if it doesn't happen for you, it's totally 100% normal and okay. And there's nothing wrong with you and you are a good mom and it will come. And when it does, it's like, oh, it's the best. And it doesn't mean you don't love your baby. It's just, you know, there's a difference between love and in love too. Like we all know that. Like, you know, that there's like infatuation at the beginning of a romantic relationship. And then there's like the love you have in the long-term relationship with your partner. And it's, they're different kinds of love. They're both love. Right? So, but I do love, I just got it yesterday. I was like looking at him and he was just being so cute, eating his dinner, like picking it up and putting it in his mouth. I was just like, and I just felt like the, like all, like almost like a full body tingle. I was just like, I love you so much. It was very hard not to like go over and give him smooches. But he was eating. So I just had to stare at him like a weirdo.
Well, you know, that's what we're here for, to be weird to our kids. So. That's amazing. Well, thank you, Emily, so much for your question. I think that it was really good for me and Laura to share this information and reflect back on the early days of our babies. It was fun to talk about that, and hopefully that'll be helpful to you guys.
Yes, and good luck with your pregnancy and your childbirth, whatever form it may take. Oh, Shauna, I think we did it.
I think we did it. We got through all the questions. Yay. But if you do have more questions, you can always reach out to us. We love hearing from you. Laura, where can they reach us?
We are at BigFatPositivePodcast.com, also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BFP Podcast. We also have a Facebook community group. Just search for Big Fat Positive Community. It's a closed group. Request to join. I will add you. Or you can email us, contact@BigFatPositivePodcast.com. That's a great way to send us voice memos.
Big Fat Positive is produced by Laura Bierick, Shauna Maiko, and Steve Yeager.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.